It's Wednesday, so you know what that means. Welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast. Joining myself this week, Stuart Court, is, as ever, Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
Well, I had no idea it was Wednesday until you said that, I have to say. I think that we're in that week where the days carry no names, just, what sandwich you might eat on that day. But no, things are good. Obviously Christmas isn't necessarily my main festival, but I actually had a really enjoyable day. It was just my wife, my sister came over, and only three people to worry about instead of the usual 10 or 11. So it was lovely. Very nice.
I mean, you had your first boomerang TikTok as well, which you tried to put on your sister, but it was quite clearly a ANC creation.
I would own it 100% if it was me, but you can very easily see the watermarks and the usernames there that it was my beloved sister, not me. I'd happily own it.
Yeah, it was a pleasant surprise to see joy on your face for a change, Adam.
Well, we talk about sport on this show, so I don't
That's
really
true.
Care. You're not going to see joy, are you?
That's true. So, the Seahawks played the Los Angeles Rams in Seattle on the home regular season closer on Sunday. And as I said to someone earlier today, I haven't had as much fun watching a Seahawks game in quite a while. The Seahawks won 29 in an 11-point blowout, Adam. And finally, Jared Goff was Jared Goff.
I mean, I've been waiting to see him just properly have one against us. Because even the games that we've won, I think he's 6-4 against the Seahawks now. But even in the three previous games, I can think of two. Why can't I think of the third one?
Well, they won one 2 years ago on the field goal. It was last year on the field goal.
I know what it was, because Goff played 1 year under John Fassel. On the game that he was there when Sherman laid him out. That was the third win. Yeah. In the other two, he's still been brilliant when the Seahawks have won. Less so, I guess, in the Coliseum. But certainly in the game that Legatron missed the kick last year, Goff was still great. And I've just been waiting to see him give us one of the games that he normally saves for every other team. And finally, we got it. And it was fucking great.
I mean, the Wentz one against for the Eagles, a month ago was bad. But the one Quandre got off Goff on Sunday is potential. I mean, I can't think of any worse. Remember Jake Browning throwing one for the Huskies? It's against Bama in one of the big games that he played for Washington. Mm-hmm. But I mean, who was he throwing it to?
Yeah, it doesn't get much worse than that. I mean, That's the kind of interception that when Sean McVay sits down at the end of the season, you imagine that's the kind of play that will be running through his mind on a number of occasions as he's planning what the hell he's going to do under center. Because, a lot of people are dancing on the Rams' graves, which, you know, is funny objectively. But, you know, with that coach and some of those defensive players, they're always going to be competent. It just depends on what they do at the quarterback position, because Goff is obviously the factor that's going to hold them up. Honestly, I could talk about this for the whole hour today, Stu, just about how shit he is. That would give me as much pleasure. I got nothing. Yeah, who cares? Seriously, talk to me in 2 weeks when the playoffs start. Let's just talk about how rubbish Jared Goff is and how we got one right from scouting onwards, Stu. We did it.
24 for 43, 234 yards, zero touchdowns, and one interception. He's just sacked just three times. I mean, the pressure rate from Jamal Benson Mayowa had his best day ever in terms of pressure rate. I think he was hurried 24 times on 43 dropbacks. I mean, it's been the MO, it's been the way to get in and affect him the most is just get in his shadow, get in his, within his social break social distancing rules against Jared Goff, and he's going to make mistakes. His Jets did it last week, and the Seahawks finally manufactured pass rush. Jaron Reed had a pretty big day. Puna Ford was there. Jamal Adams was there. Obviously, Carlos Dunlap had a nice couple of plays, and obviously Benson Mayo. I mean, I think Pete or someone asked Pete about what the alignment of going for Jamal and stopping and getting to Goff was, and he kind of just sidestepped it, as Pete Carroll does quite often. But it was shown the impact that Jamal and Carlos Dunlap made on that defense getting to that quarterback, didn't it, on Sunday?
Yeah, well, they also got home with four on more occasions than they've probably done at any stage this season.
Yeah.
And ultimately, like, there's a lot of modern blueprints in the NFL for how you win. But the one that stands out the most defensively is that if you can't get home with four, you're not going to beat the best guys. No. So I think Adams' blitz rate was down this week versus the previous couple of weeks. And to be honest, I think that's a healthy thing for the future of how they're playing. For me, the game was just, it reminded me of a game that like Cooper Helfitt would score a touchdown in the sense that it was just the most quintessentially fundamental Pete Carroll game of football that you're ever likely to see. Yep. I don't really think anyone did anything to a spectacular level, but everyone did their jobs that they're employed for to an elite level. And as a result, they won the game. It was probably the cleanest game of Pete Carroll fundamentals football. Now, obviously, within that context, you could say, well, that's not how you win Super Bowls, but we can park that for one side. For the way that Pete Carroll wants to play, I thought that was about as good an indicator and a good an exhibition of playing to a coach's philosophy that I've seen for a long time.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I think it's pretty much exactly what we said on the pod last week. This offense doesn't need to do much with how the defense is playing. 230 passing yards, 900 yards rushing, no receiver over 60, 70 yards receiving. Obviously, no one got in the end zone. I mean, you're going to win, 80% of games doing that. And the fact that it come against the Rams is kind of, that confidence level is starting to blossom a little bit as the year ticks, how far this team could go. Because there was no mistakes from Russell Wilson. He didn't really force too many. He had a couple of overthrows, one to Tyler, one to DK, when he got smashed a couple of times. Chris Carson just chipped along. DK took what he had against Jalen, or not Jalen, on Sunday. It's just kind of, there was everything I hope we would see was pretty much there on Sunday, I think, apart from those two long balls to Tyler and DK are caught. It was literally the Lou Reed once sang, "It's the perfect day," isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned on the show last week that I thought this was the game that we've been waiting for 2 weeks since the Giants, because we needed to see what this team are about. And I actually didn't feel it was quite as instructive as I thought it was going to be, largely because the Rams, offensively especially, were just so bad that they didn't really put up any challenge that the Jets or the Washington football team hadn't done in the previous couple of weeks. Yeah. So I'm still sitting here thinking, you know, what is the true level of this defense? Because they've been playing against bums ultimately for the last 6 weeks, although they have held, I think, their last five or six opponents to fairly well under their average score for the season. So that's obviously a good sign. I just thought I'd be doing this podcast with a lot more knowledge about where I think the Seahawks are than I am. But I guess it's going to come down to waiting for the first game in the playoffs, maybe even the second game, to see that, because the path doesn't look too rocky for the next couple of weeks.
No, it is. But I think one reason it doesn't look that rocky is because of how the defense is playing. I think pre-Buffalo, it was giving up 30 points a game. Since Buffalo, it's given up just 15.2 points a game, which, as we said a few weeks ago, is 2013, 14, 15 levels, obviously with a much more esteemed cast of characters back then. But I mean,
it's probably even better if you adjust it for the modern NFL versus what it was like 5 or 6 years ago offensively.
Yeah. But also there is an asterisk at the offenses and the teams they're playing. But then again, we put 40 up on the Jets and they go and reel off two straight wins and they're now watching BYU and Ohio State film instead of Clemson film, Adam. But I think the whole outlook of this team is changed considerably, probably in the last, I know it's the Jets and everything, but I mean, 40 points in the NFL, 37 point win is a tough go, as the Rams show the week later. But yeah, there's just something which is just seems to be, and they seem, I think Jamal has shown it in his last two press conferences as well, how boisterous, and like we've talked about a few times with him, but also before him, where this team had lost that personality somewhat. You've still got the quiet assassin of Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright just going about their business, but now they've got that boisterous Nuss, don't think that's a word, back in the defense. And obviously, you've got DK Metcalf pushing and shoving everyone every time he makes a catch. It's, I know, the wheels are starting to turn a bit in my view, Adam.
I think it says a lot about Adams' leadership and his personality that he's come in and been like that pretty much since day one in a room full of like roster legends.
Yeah.
And the fact there's been no pushback and in fact they've embraced it just shows how good a guy he must be to have around the place.
Yeah. I think Jamal's, it may be because he was so desperate to leave where he was before, but I think Jamal has bought in more than anyone else that the Seahawks were trading for. Sheldon Richardson didn't really get the platform to show if he bought in, but Jimmy Graham didn't really seem to give a damn. Percy Harvin obviously went around allegedly punching players, and Clowney just seemed like a one man band kind of deal. But Jamal is all in. He's fun to watch, especially when they win games. Offensively, Seahawks, Russell Wilson, 20 for 32, 225, a touchdown. And also, he had a rare rushing touchdown. And like the Seahawks really, Adam, had two drives on Sunday. And it was all sparked by HOF DMO making his one grab, a 45-yard turnaround, get your feet down in bounds. I mean, it's the reason David Moore, that catch is exactly the reason David Moore's on this team, because he can make that play. It was a spark. Obviously, 18-yard pass to Carlos Hyde, and then Russell Wilson waited as long as he could to try and get to Disney, then ran one in. Two or three plays later, it was a spark which the game and that offense needed, and David Moore again was the cause of it.
Yeah, I was messaging with one of our ex-Seahawk player friends during the game, which, considering we haven't got many, doesn't really, you know, narrows it down fairly significantly. But there's a point to the name drop. There's a point to the name drop. And I was saying that, you know, in my uneducated eyes, the offense at some point needs to do something to help the defense out here, because the defense is playing phenomenally well for the first, you know, 30, 35 minutes, and they're not getting a lot back from the offense. And all of a sudden, they put together two of the cleanest drives of the whole season. And I didn't necessarily expect to see that. But then, yeah, the pass to Moore really lit something under them. And then it was just so clean. It was like when we were talking about last week about the scripted plays that even Adam Gase can call, it was almost like they had two scripted drives that just took them straight into the end zone almost untouched. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, the second one was arguably more impressive because it was more methodical. Like the first one was the 45-yard play, 18-yard play, and 6-7-yard rush from Wilson. But the other one was 8 to Tyler, 9 to DK, da-da-da-da-da-da. And then obviously Jacob Hollister in the end zone a year to the day almost, since he was kept just shy of it against the Niners, and the team didn't win the NFC West. After that play, they did win it off his touchdown on Sunday. Anything else on the offensive side? DK is now just 6 yards on Sunday against the 49ers to become the franchise leader with receiving yards in a season, breaking Steve Largent's 35-year-old record. I was quite annoyed he didn't get those 6 yards in garbage time, Adam, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I mean, also quite lucky that there's something to play for that relates to another team, because had the seeding been completely sealed for by the time we played on Sunday, because I think the Packers game initially was scheduled to be an early kickoff, but now obviously they always put it in time with each other so that all the teams play at the same time. So Metcalf is going to get the start on Sunday because the Seahawks will want to put themselves into a position whereby if there's a slip up, we could get the number one seed. But yeah, I mean, it was quite lucky that he's got that opportunity, because in another world, he might be rested altogether on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be interesting to watch. Always compete how long and how far into the night the first string offense and defense do compete on Sunday. Adam, anything else from last Sunday to pay mention to?
Anything else from last Sunday? I don't think so. I just thought it was a really clean game, and I was supremely impressed with I don't want to say buy-in, but I just thought the way in which they played was just great, and like proper Seahawk football, which we haven't seen for a long time.
it was just nice to actually beat the Rams and not be able to point to, oh, this happened, that's why you won. We actually beat the heels off them, I think, especially that offense. Because as we say, well, the Rams eventually, finally, after, what, 10, 15 years, actually do have a quarterback starting this Sunday in John Walford, the former Wake Forest guy, because, I mean, he's probably going to be terrible, but
One thing that does stand out is Jamal Adams making a play for the highlight reel that wasn't a sack, but chasing down Darrell Henderson, who was running into the end zone.
Yeah.
You know, that could be potentially season defining, that tackle, because the whole game could have flipped on that in a moment.
Yeah, I mean, that goal line stand was somewhere else. I also do think that made a massive difference. Cam Akers didn't play on Sunday. He started to look like their guy at running back. He didn't play on Sunday. And Darrell Henderson was injured on that play. And Malcolm Brown is not up to their level. And it forced the ball even more into Jared Goff's hand, which had hilarious consequences, as we all saw. One other thing on defense, he only played 28 snaps on Sunday with how the Rams go about it offensively. And Jordan Brooks, man, I think I said to you or in our group chat, he's becoming jerseyable quite quickly. 8 tackles on 28 snaps, and some of them were flashy plays. Aitman and Buck were pointing them out as well, which he's like, and RJ Collier is hitting somewhat, I mean, not blow away defensive player of the year stats or play, but he's a consistent presence. He pops up more often than maybe some may realize, but Brooks and Collier is, yeah, but Brooks is on a different level to that. I think he easily is the most first round pick this team have had probably since 2012, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not the auspicious of groups to be choosing from. But yeah, I think you're almost certainly right.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens next year with KJ Wright's decision in the off-season. Moving ahead, the Seahawks won the NFC West on Sunday, the 5th NFC West title in the 11 Pete Carroll years. Pete's 5th matches, how many, and the franchise leader Mike Holmgren won in his time as Seahawks coach. I mean, it's just ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, this team never made the playoffs for the first 30 years of existence. Now it's an every year thing, and like we moan, we wring hands on certain things, but this is just, it's something which people maybe need to realize isn't what is supposed to happen year on year on year. I mean, we're seeing it with New England this year. That season is falling apart after, what, 15, 20 years, and the Seahawks are getting near that level, aren't they?
I think I forgot about the magnitude and gravity of winning your division. Like, seeing all the tweets and the Instagram posts afterwards and the celebrations of the players and even the press, like Michael Dugar talking about, you know, NFC West champions, I kind of forgot, because I'm almost, not used to it, but obviously, winning the division isn't the goal for the season. It's a really lovely thing to happen on the way. But I think it was important that the players really got a chance to kind of enjoy the moment. And it resonated with me, and it made me realize that, you know, what they are doing is worthy of serious praise. You know, it may not be the way in which everyone would draw it up to go about it, but what they've achieved is special. And yeah, it's something that deserves celebration.
Yeah, in the last 6 years, every single Cardinals, Niners, Rams, and Seahawks have all won the NFC West. It's the toughest division over the Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson years in the NFL without question. I mean, the AFC North had a year, really, when it was 2 or 3 teams, but and the Seahawks have won almost half of the NFC West. They've won 9 NFC Wests since they joined the division after realignment in 2002. It's just, I mean, yeah, this is just a ridiculous run. It's something I do think it does make a massive difference within the division, because you get a home playoff game. May not matter as much this year with no fans, but on a normal year in Seattle, getting a home playoff game is a what, 6-point swing, really?
Well, it's also probably what keeps you one game further away from having to play in Green Bay, which at the moment looks like, you know, the last place you want to be going.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they end up being a third seed, then they're going to definitely have 2 home playoff games. 3v6, then you'd have 1, 2, 3, 4. No, they'd be on the road, wouldn't they?
Yeah. They need the second seed, so they need the Saints to lose.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, even if they... Yeah, it still helps. You're right, as you say.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all right. But also, there is obviously a chance... Also, winning the NFC West helps with the chance of even hosting a NFC title game in a month's time, which would be something which didn't look entirely possible after Buffalo, Adam.
No, not exactly. It wouldn't have been what you were putting the house on, that's for sure.
No. Yeah, moving on, the Seahawks for Week 17 face what is left of the San Francisco 49ers, who this week have put Brandon Ayuk, Richard Sherman, and Trent Williams as their another starting wide receiver, their starting cornerback, and their starting left tackle on injured reserve. They now have more players on injured reserve, I think, than anyone in the NFL history. It is a long, old list. The quarterback situation seems to be somewhat strange. They've signed Josh Rosen onto, I think, their active roster.
Yeah.
And they've got CJ Beathard, George Kittle probably will play. And then it's just bodies who are left standing. And obviously, one more thing with this game, which is very 2020, happening in 2021, is that this San Francisco home game is happening in Arizona, Adam.
This is my biggest concern of the whole game. The fact that it's happening at the absolute hellhole of the earth. And
which, if you went to that stadium, is the stupidest thing you could say.
Yeah, I can imagine it's the most glorious place on the planet. But there's so much of me that's thinking, I almost wish the seeding wasn't an issue and then we could just rest players all together. But the fact that we've got to be competitive on that field just gives me the shivers. Yeah. And I'm just not looking forward to that. I almost think if you offered me a completely healthy loss, I might be tempted to take it given our record on that bloody field. It just terrifies me.
Yeah, because the worst we can be is third seed, isn't it? Because the train wreck that is the East.
Yeah,
I think I'd agree. I just want to get out of Dodge. I mean, if DK Metcalf can make a 7-yard catch in his first play and sit him down, I'll be fine with that.
Yeah, that'd be handy.
But the 49ers, what's left? It's not really much to discuss, is there, really, with the 49ers? I mean, it's not the team we faced, 6 weeks ago, and that wasn't much of what was left from last year. It's just been a year. They're all going to hope ends quickly, and then it'd be an interesting team to watch to see what they do at the quarterback position and with another early pick for the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, they haven't had the injury luck, but they pick the years to be at the top end of the draft, don't they? And they usually make the most of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think this will almost be a hard game to lose given the number of injuries they've got. Like, we'd have to go some to lose to, the 49ers reserves. Not that it couldn't happen, but I mean, the one reason it may not happen is that they've probably got two of the top five coaches at the moment in the NFL in Shanahan and Salah. I have to say, I was watching the game on Sunday thinking, Robert Salah is 41 years of age. He's got all the time in the world. And he may never have a better group than this current defensive front that he's got in San Francisco. And I just wonder if he might give it one more year if Shanahan can convince him. He probably won't, because there'll be enough head coaching jobs that come up that will make him want to take it. But and I'll be delighted if he gets out of there, because the two of them are a terrifying combination.
Yeah, I think he's from Detroit, isn't he, Salah?
All the more reason to stay well clear of there.
He's definitely from Michigan, so I think that'd be where, I wouldn't be surprised if that's where he goes. But yeah, it's just like, even with everyone missing, they've still got, I mean, Kinlaw looks quite good, Fred Warner is playing well again, and Jason Verrett, who our pal Mike Dugard tweeted should really be in the conversation for comeback player of the year, because I mean, he was out of the league, he's on league minimum, and he's just shut down one side of the field. It's going to be not a game, because it's a divisional game, but yeah, the Seahawks should win this. CJ Beathard, George Kittle's involvement is slightly annoying, but
yes,
they should still. I mean, the defense is it's a perfect time for the defense to play them, isn't it?
You'd think so. I picked the Cardinals defense in fantasy last week thinking that Beathard's, shite, and actually he ended up putting a pretty clean game together. Yeah, look, if this is going to sound the most ridiculously obvious point, but the Seahawks should be able to, you know, if they score enough points, the Niners won't be able to beat them.
Very Kevin Keegan of you.
Very much so, yeah. But you can't see how they would be able to score more than 17 points.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think if the Seahawks can get to 20-21, I'd be pretty confident that that would be the win. I'd probably be tempted to take the under, whatever that might be, with the men in the desert. But yeah, I think that should be enough to get it done.
Also, one more question on Sunday. Are you going to watch the rest of the game when Geno Smith comes in?
Absolutely not. I was switching on to Red Zone to see what other interesting games are going on.
I kind of forgot that is a possibility, but depending on how the scoreboard watching goes, it could be an earlier one than we realise. The over-under is 46, Adam.
Yeah, I'd take the under.
Yeah, and me. So, moving ahead, the Seahawks will then go into the NFC playoffs. They could pretty much play anyone, really. And they could end up playing the Rams again, the Bears, the Cardinals, the Buccaneers. I think they're possible. Or are they entrenched on four?
No, they won't. The Saints win that division, won't they?
No, five even. Five, sorry.
Yeah, I think they're... Yes, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Brady against Andy Dalton by the looks of things. If my predictions come good. So, yeah, six or seven. Yeah, I mean, it could be the Bear. The Cardinals are still stinking around, I think. They've really messed it up big time, haven't they? Yeah, I mean, look, it's going to be a home game against a team that you should beat, ultimately. That's probably all you can say.
Yeah, I think the Rams are missing the playoffs altogether, to be quite honest. I think the Cardinals will win on Sunday.
Even is it Rams Cardinals?
Yeah, no Kyler, no Goff. I have no idea who the Cardinals' backup quarterback is. I think he's a CFL quarterback, which is wild. They are wild people. But Warren Moon is in the CFL.
Could be an interesting game.
Yeah, maybe. I think it's a Sky game as well. The Seahawks are rarely, for rare treat, aren't on Sky Sports this weekend. Do you want a quick spin in thy bin?
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Go.
I'm not sure if this is the most bin-worthy thing I've ever said. It's certainly not, because I've mentioned people like Skip Bayless before. But I'm getting quite... I find it very unsatisfying when a quarterback under center on the half-yard line just takes the snap and just sort of jumps over the line and a point of the ball breaks the plane and it's given as a touchdown. Similarly, when they're under center and they give it to the running back who just jumps over the line and the ball just breaks the plane and someone tries to stop it, and it just feels a little bit too easy to score. And I'm not convinced that I find it a very nice way to score, or that it should be particularly fair. I was talking about it with a friend, and he said that maybe the 2-yard line is the closest you can go to the goal line without a penalty. So me, a penalty in the end zone, or you know, a penalty. The 1.5-yard line where the ball, like, they just kind of gesture the ball over the plane. I don't particularly enjoy it. And I thought I'd share that with you today.
I mean, 49 may have ended differently.
Why is that?
Super Bowl 49, mate. If we're on the 2-yard line, maybe it's a completely different...
Well, yeah, I mean, quite. That's...
Yeah.
Well, and that's just another reason.
Yeah, it is. I never really thought about it that much. I mean, I'm not sure why Pete Carroll challenged that fumble on Sunday, but that was interesting. But yeah, I've never really thought about it. It's just, I mean, it's weird because it's called a touchdown and it's the one thing they don't do, I guess.
Yeah. Well,
or maybe being too literal, but...
Or kick the ball in general, which is something that doesn't happen too much.
No. I've never really thought about it that much, but to be honest...
It's Drew Brees does it the most. He just kind of... Just kind of puts the ball over the line and then just pulls it back in. And it's just shit.
I mean, it could be worse. It could be Alvin Kamara running in 6 touchdowns on him.
Yeah, that wasn't ideal. For those that have certainly no interest, but just to revel in my pain, I lost 2 fantasy football finals on Sunday and it was not the best.
Yeah, I mean, 6 touchdowns. You lost outrageous. 1 technically on Saturday, really. Yeah, I don't think I've got anyone for the bin this week. I don't really pay much attention to the games, really. I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars are really annoying.
Like, in what sense?
They can't decide on a quarterback. I think Doherty, his name is on Twitter, he just wrote a world stuff. And when Gardner Minshew was ruled out a few weeks ago, he put Gardner Minshew is out as a, and then like in like the brackets, it was scapegoat. Because that's exactly what he is. It's like they've scapegoated him. I think they're in. Trevor Lawrence will look better in a Jacksonville Jaguars uniform. DJ Chart will be fantasy football relevant and could be someone to watch next year. But Shad Khan, and I know they fired the GM before Marone, but I think the Jet.
The Minshew thing is a tank, surely. That's why they played Matt Burns on the weekend.
It has to be. They're playing him this week as well, when they've already sealed the first. I mean, surely that, surely
just
that's
doubling down on the tank.
Yeah, but surely that's where you. I mean, I guess it's pointless looking at Luton. I mean, you're going to take your next quarterback for the next 10, 15 years and 4 months. It's just annoying. I mean, Minshew's fun. If you're going to lose, at least have some fun with it. Because Minshew is. Mark will be more fun to watch than.
Well, I presume they're worried about that they wouldn't lose with Minshew.
Yeah, but this week doesn't matter.
No, you're right.
I guess have some fun. I mean, I think they've got fans in the stadium as well.
You can't legally tank by NFL rules, can you? So I wonder if them playing Glennon again is them kind of saying, look, we're not just tanking, and you know, now we're going to try and win. I mean, how incredible. They beat the Colts in the first week of the season.
Yeah, and they've lost
14 since.
14 since. With three different quarterbacks. I mean, James Robinson's not playing this week either. So no. They're not even bothering to run the ball on Sunday. It's just annoying. And then Trevor Lawrence is going to end up going there. And I mean, it's a really annoying year to play AFC South. It's 2021. Because there could be two new quarterbacks, Derek Henry and Deshaun Watson.
Good.
Yeah, fun. And two of them on the road at 10 a.m. probably as well. Anything else NFL-wise? I mean, the NFC East is terrible, but that's going to be fun to watch on Sunday.
Yeah, it's hugely compelling.
I don't really understand why they put the Giants game on Sunday night. It'd be better if they played at the same time. No, not the Giants, the Washington game.
I think it's the only game that isn't dependent. I was listening to Greg Rosenthal on around the NFL talk about this, that there are certain rules that have to be in place, and it's the only game that's not contingent on another result to get a result, I don't think.
Okay.
So I think it was the only game that they could have that would guarantee that there was either something on it, or that in knowing what had previously happened wouldn't alter what was about to happen on the... Like, I think that the football team will be in the playoffs if they win.
Yeah.
And if they lose, they will not be in the playoffs.
Yeah. If the Eagles win and the Giants win, the Giants are in.
Yeah. So I think the Philly and the Washington game is the only one there that the previous results won't impact what happens there. And that's why it had to be the last game.
Yeah. I think when Geno Smith comes in, that's the game I'm going to put on. I think. Because, I mean, if anyone wants to go to New York next year, COVID allowing, you want the Giants and Eagles to win on Sunday, because then the Seahawks will play at MetLife Stadium, Adam, which we went there last time they did that.
Indeed we did.
Yeah. The thing is, anything else otherwise? NFL? I mean, the Bengals quarterback looked good again.
It was two different quarterbacks, wasn't it?
Was it? That's how much attention I was paying to that game on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, JJ Watt had his big speech, didn't he?
I mean, I've done a 180 on that dude.
Yeah, no, it was a good one. I think there's a lot of teams that are looking forward to the offseason now, aren't there?
Yeah, one more thing. Seahawkers chapter have had their MVP vote the last 10 days or so. DK Metcalf beat out Jamal Adams into second and Russell Wilson into third. Adam, we might as well. It's the end of the year. I think DK Metcalf has been the best player on the scene this year.
Definitely been the best, but the term valuable is stupid and should be removed from all sport. It's a bit like sports personality of the year. It just doesn't mean anything. And by value, Wilson will always be the Seahawks MVP.
Yeah. Who? What about league-wide? Who's going to be the MVP for the league?
At the minute, it looks like it's going to be that prick Aaron Rodgers, unfortunately. But the only good thing about that is that we might be able to knock off the MVP in the playoffs, which would just be one of the great things.
That'll be fun. Comeback player is going to be Alex Smith, defensive player of the year.
TJ Watt,
yeah,
for me.
I think it's him. I think it's him or... Yeah, I think it's TJ Watt. Offensive player of the year, which is weird. It's separate from the MVP because it's usually always the quarterback.
It is, it is weird, isn't it? I think it should probably... I think Derrick Henry deserves some kind of recognition for what he's done. But Devontae Adams has probably got to be close as well because he's just been unbelievable for the Packers all season.
I mean... If he is the league leader in receiving yards for the position he plays, Travis Kelce
should be also true.
I mean, Tyreek Hill could be. Alvin Kamara has basically carried the Saints through 2 months of the season, really.
He's got 22 touchdowns.
Insane. I mean, Sean Alexander in 2005 got like 25, 26 or something.
Yeah, is LaDainian Thompson the record holder?
Yeah, he broke it the year after. And I think that's what made Sean Alexander's knees crumble, was that he did it so easily. Rookies of the year, Chase Young, probably, and Justin Jefferson.
I think that's pretty safe bet. I mean,
Chase Young is just wild to watch. He's so
he's incredible.
But yeah, I think that's every...
Well, actually, Justin Herbert could be offensive rookie of the year.
I mean, how are the Vikings not in the playoffs?
Well, Mike Zimmer said that they were the worst defense he's ever had, and he's been a coach for 27 years. So
he picked them.
I know.
I mean, not. But when you've got Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, and Dalvin Cook, we're talking about our offense, but not having to put much points. It doesn't really, surely it doesn't matter what the defense does.
It's probably as good a 1-2-3 as any team in the league has, if not the best.
Yeah.
I mean, the Titans have got pretty good going with Henry, Brown,
and
Corey Davis. We haven't got a running back that touches Dalvin Cook, though.
Yeah, I guess. But I think our two receivers are better than Thielen.
Yeah, although, actually, I wanted to bring up Tyler Lockett. Kind of feels like a bit of a forgotten man at the moment. And I said in our group chat, and I phrased it wrongly, and you shut me down, I said... Has Wilson become too dependent on DK Metcalf? That's not actually what I meant to say. What I meant to say is, like, why has he just seemingly forgotten about Tyler Lockett's existence?
I don't know. I've got a feeling there's a weird feeling that Tyler Lockett might not be long for the... I think it's Doug Baldwin. Maybe not this year, but I don't see Lockett. Lockett's not going to be Larry Fitzgerald.
No, I think you're right.
Maybe that's come into it because DK just is basically the wide receiver version of Russell Wilson in his like whole approach to the game. One more thing on Russell Wilson, maybe someone who are not on social media may not have seen it. His video to Kobe Bryant, Adam.
I haven't seen it. I've only had one person that I know comment on it and said, "Is it bad that I think this is terrible?" He doesn't like Russell Wilson in the first place. Oh. He's a Packers fan, so that might be part of it. But what's the crack with it?
Because he wore Kobe Bryant black Lakers jersey on Sunday, and he was pretty emotional after the game, his press conference as well, talking George Floyd and everything, COVID and everything. And there's a video where he's walking out of the tunnel and he just does a monologue to Kobe and Gigi.
It's 7 minutes long, isn't it?
Yeah, I can only get through 90 seconds of it. I turned it off. I get like the end of year thing. And like Kobe Bryant was the biggest sports. I mean, yeah, Kobe, yeah, easily. He's like the biggest sports name. He's like the Mount Rushmore. But I don't know. It was 10 months ago. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. It's just a bit.
I'm going to watch it later on and just try and get my head around it. But yeah.
It was a very if any quarterback was going to do it, it'd be Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a bit nitpicky of what he's done, but it's just like, was it really necessary? It's a really cool message and everything, but I'm not sure it was necessary 10 months on. But yeah, if you want to get involved with podcasts, all you can, your usual means and methods. We will be podcasting next week, Adam, previewing a playoff game. Woo-hoo. I think I was trying to work out, is this the first NFC West title we've won since we started doing this pod?
The curse of the Podbino.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like,
maybe it is. It must be.
The first one was 2016. That's our first season.
Yeah, then it must be.
I don't know. But yeah.
Next I've got one more thing to say. I think Jimmy Graham is like second or third in the league with touchdowns this season or something ridiculous.
Was he?
Or he's leading the Bears for touchdowns. And it does just make you wonder that. I know people say they didn't like him, but just throw the guy, the rock, in the end.
But it doesn't even matter the quarterback, clearly.
Anyone. He's quarterback proof.
Yeah. I'm not going to get down that road again. Darrell Bevell didn't have a great day for the Lions, so I'm going to ignore that one. But Jimmy Graham is good.
He wasn't there, was he, Bevell?
No, he wasn't. What was it? Your term, Jimmy Graham is good at football.
He is good at football.
Which was once put on an ill-fitting T-shirt as well. That's it for the Ped. Probably back next week previewing will be a playoff game. There's only one bye, isn't there?
Yeah.
This is a well-thought-out and well-researched podcast. This has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Happy New Year. Go Hawks.
Yeah, Jamal, just NFC West champs. How's that sound to you?
God is good. I don't want to be too happy because I don't want people to say, you know, he's dramatic or he hasn't been there before. You damn right I haven't been there before. So damn it, it feels good. It feels great.